first case on our calendar is 08315 Robert Meyer versus United Parcel Service. Ms. Bond.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Casey Bond. I'm counsel for appellant United Parcel Service Incorporated, UPS. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
This court has consistently interpreted and applied revised code chapter 4112 in a manner that upholds the legislative intent regarding the treatment of age discrimination claims. The first district's decision below in the Meyer case disregarded this court's precedent and undermined the legislative framework for age discrimination claims. Therefore, the relevant portions of the decision below should be reversed. As stated in UPS's proposition of law, in order to preserve the detailed framework that the legislature established for age discrimination claims, an age discrimination claim brought under the general provision of 4112.99 must be subject to the substantive provisions for age claims that are contained elsewhere in 4112, specifically 0.02N and 0.14. Even a cursory review of Chapter 4112 reveals two undeniable conclusions regarding the legislature's intent for age discrimination claims. First, age discrimination claims are intended to be treated differently than other forms of discrimination. And second, age claims are intended to be subject to certain substantive requirements that includes election of remedies, limitations on remedies related to the statute of limitations, and a bar for cases that are subject to an arbitration remedy. The Meyer decision negates both of these legislative intents and therefore needs to be reversed. Importantly, the Meyer decision below renders meaningless the substantive provisions in Chapter 4112 relating to age discrimination claims. First, the legislature identified its intent that at least some age discrimination claims be subject to a 180-day statute of limitations. In subsection 0.02N, the legislature explicitly placed a 180-day statute of limitation on these claims.
Before you get into that argument, the substantive argument, I'd like to hear your argument on the relation back issue.
Mr. Chief Justice, the relation back argument is simply a red herring in this case. Mr. Meyer claims that the case is moot because his amended complaint alleging age discrimination related back to his initial complaint and therefore fell within the 180-day statute of limitations. The issue in this case is much broader than merely the statute of limitations. The issue is, what is the effect of Chapter 4112's substantive framework for age claims on an age claim brought under 0.99? The statute of limitations is merely one piece of that overall substantive framework for age discrimination claims. The statute of limitations is not a discrete issue in this case. Even if Mr. Meyer's age claim relates back to his original complaint, which UPS disputes, his claim is still barred by the overall statutory framework, specifically 4112.14C, which prohibits a statutory remedy for age claims if the claim has been arbitrated and the discharge found to be for just cause, is as happened in Mr. Meyer's case. In contrast to Mr. Meyer's
if we agree with your position on the application of 14C, is that the end of the case? And do we even reach the statute of limitations?
If you agree with us on 0.14C, that is the end of the case. There is no dispute factually in this matter that Mr. Meyer's claim was subject to the party's grievance and arbitration process, and that through that process, his termination was found to be for just cause. Because it was found to be for just cause, applying 0.14C would bar his statutory claim.
What appeal, if any, would he have from that determination by the arbitrator?
There is a limited standard of review for arbitration claims that parties can invoke in order to directly appeal the determination made in an arbitration procedure. There is also, if Mr. Meyer feels that he was not adequately represented by his union throughout that process, he could also file a claim under Section 301 of the National Labor Relations Act, which would claim both a breach of the duty of fair representation by his union and a breach of contract by UPS in wrongfully terminating his employment. So he has various avenues of relief if he does not believe that his arbitration remedy provides sufficient relief for him.
Let me take you back quickly to your point about the 180-day limitation on age discrimination cases. Is it your view that all age discrimination cases are governed by the 180-day limit?
I believe that is one appropriate interpretation for the court to make of the statute. It is clear that the only time the legislature has explicitly made a statement relating to what the proper statute of limitation should be for age claims is in 0.02N, and therein they said 180 days. UPS has argued alternatively that one framework the legislature may have intended is that to obtain the broad relief allowed by 0.02N, the legislature intended that there must be a 180-day statute of limitation, but that to get the more limited relief that's articulated in 0.14, that individuals would then have access to the 6-year statute of limitation. But because the legislature has only in one place identified its intent regarding the proper statute of limitations, and they identified that as 180 days, it is absolutely appropriate for this court to determine that all age claims under Chapter 4112 should be subject to that 180-day statute of limitations. UPS's position in this case, in contrast to Mr. Meyer's position, gives effect to all the statutory provisions regarding age discrimination claims in Chapter 4112. As this court has noted, the role of 0.99 is as a gap filler. It is intended to provide a civil remedy for causes of action that would not otherwise have a cause of action. With age discrimination, individuals already have two avenues of relief. They can file a civil action under 0.02N, or they can file a civil action under 0.14. There was simply no need to fill a gap regarding age discrimination. Under UPS's framework, then 0.99 has effect as a gap filler and provides a civil remedy for all forms of age discrimination, all forms of discrimination other than age discrimination. But under UPS's analysis, the remaining portions of Chapter 4112 that include substantive provisions regarding age discrimination also have meaning. Under UPS's interpretation, the statute of limitations under 0.02N is still effective. The arbitration bar in 0.14C remains effective. And the election of remedies requirement remains effective. Under Mr. Meyer's interpretation, all of these substantive requirements fall away and become meaningless because under the decision rendered by the court below in Meyer and the position articulated by Mr. Meyer in this court is that any individual can file an age discrimination claim under 0.99 and avoid all of those substantive procedures for age claims. They will not be subject to the election of remedies. They will not be subject to the arbitration bar, and they have a 6-year statute of limitation to obtain the unlimited relief that has been held to be available under 0.99. For all these reasons, we ask that the court reverse the decision below, and I'll reserve my 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Bond. Ms. Hinners.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, counsel, good morning. UPS's proposition of law is in and of itself a contradiction. It asks this court to preserve the legislature's intent not by applying what the legislature wrote, but by ignoring it and rewriting it into something else. Mr. Meyer respectfully requests the court decline to do so and affirm the First District for 3 reasons. 1, the age-relevant provisions of 4112 are plain and unambiguous. They neither require nor permit interpretation. Every single issue raised by UPS, statute of limitations, election of remedies, and even the application of the arbitration exclusion can be answered by simply applying 4112 as it's written. If there is some ambiguity or some irreconcilable conflict, which, by the way, UPS has not pointed to any, the General Assembly has expressly articulated its intent in 4112.08. It instructed this court that Chapter 4112 is to be construed liberally to promote its objective, the elimination of discrimination, and to protect those to whom it's addressed, victims of discrimination. It's to be construed to leave doors open for claims, not to slam them in victims' faces.
Well, counsel, wouldn't that be accomplished if you did view 4112.99 as a gap filler? So anything that was not enumerated in the statutory scheme there could be brought, which is, if I understand the argument of UPS, that's the purpose of 0.99.
Well, Your Honor, I think that reads the gap filler argument presented in the concurring opinion in Cosgrove pretty narrowly. It certainly ignores the five-part test that Justice Resnick set forth in that same opinion. It views the gap filler as essentially saying, well, if there's any remedy and anywhere in 4112 that addresses a particular form of discrimination, then 0.99 doesn't apply. If that were the case, 0.99 would essentially read applicable whoever violates any provision of this chapter except age discrimination or something like, or where another provision sets forth a remedy. It says neither. But the five-part test set forth in Cosgrove says this: a specific remedy provision will not prevail over 411299 unless it meets five criteria. Now, two of the criteria, and at the time that was articulated, there was only one source of rights available under Chapter 4112 applicable to age discrimination. That was 4112.02a. Well, under the current version, there's now two sources of rights, and this court talked about them in Leninger. There's 02A, and now there's 0.14A.
When would a person or a counsel advising a client ever choose the election of remedies or the 180-day statute when your position, if it prevails, renders them fairly meaningless? I mean, what is the purpose of those existing a statute, and when would you ever want to use them?
Well, Your Honor, the 180-day statute of limitations would apply for, and it'll depend on, I think it's important to say there's provisions that apply to rights, provisions that apply to remedies. So if your right is premised only under 0.02a, the 180-day statute of limitation applies.
Give me an example of what that would be that would not also be governed by 99 with its rather broad range of remedies.
Well, I'll say it wouldn't also be 0.02n, or point, yes, 0.02n says that an aggrieved individual to enforce the rights under that section, so any right available under 0.02, must bring their claim within 180 days.
Don't you have all those rights under 0.02 also in 99?
No, because just and what the Bellion Court said with regard to that right in 02A is exactly correct, not by some function of judicial interpretation, because if you follow the statute, that's what it commands. If your only source of rights is 02A, 02N says that it must be that if you want to vindicate those rights, you must bring your claim within 180 days.
And give me an example of that right, because I'm having trouble seeing what right you get under there that you couldn't also get under 99.
So for example, if you had a lesser form of discrimination, like a failure to promote situation, the source of rights available under 0.14A would not be available to you because that only deals with hire and fire situations. So the only source of rights you would have to bring your age claim would be 0.02A. And under N, those rights, and the General Assembly was specific, it used the words rights available under this section have to be brought in a civil action within 180 days. So by virtue of that, 0.99, if that's a source of rights, will not supersede that or trump that. It's subject to that. In this case, however, Mr. Meyer's source of rights, he had two sources of rights. He was fired. So he had 0.02A and 0.14A. And the entire basis of UPS's interpretation, and let me be clear, this isn't my interpretation of what the statute says. This is what the statute says, that if you follow the rights and the remedies, and if you give 0.99 the effect that this court has consistently said it deserves, that it's an independent remedy for age discrimination, then this is the outcome that's commanded by this. And that's my first point. UPS's entire argument is premised on asking this court to interpret 4112. What it fails to do is explain why that's even appropriate. It doesn't need to be interpreted. They haven't pointed to a single ambiguous phrase in the statute. And to the extent the result in Bellion was correct at the time, its rationale was off to this extent. It used the rules of statutory interpretation when it didn't have to. And the Judge Frost talked about this in his decision in Sterry versus Safe Auto, that you get to the result in Bellion under the old version of the statute, not because the court was able to interpret that way, but simply because it was a function of O2N. And at the time, that was the only source of rights available. When the General Assembly recodified 410117 and placed it into 4112, all that changed.
Counsel, in your brief, you address fairly succinctly the argument that UPS is really moot on this whole issue and waved it off by not raising it at the appropriate time. Could you go over that? And then could you also go over the issue of the arbitration?
Yes. And really, this breaks down into two issues. There's a statute of limitation issue, and there's the arbitration issue. And the First District examined them separately. The statute of limitation issue is moot based on Rule 15C. And I noticed UPS didn't address the question directly about the relation back, because the record and the factual, the procedural history in this case is, it's clear, and so is Rule 15C. Mr. Meyer initiated his complaint 158 days after his termination. His initial cause of action was workers' comp retaliation under 412390. He later amended to add an age claim based on the same transaction, the same occurrence. Under 15C, relation back was automatic. What's interesting about the argument UPS raises in its brief is that it fails to inform this court that the first time it mentioned the word statute of limitation, other than in the boilerplate of its answer, the first time it raised that issue to the trial court was in an oral motion for directed verdict at the bench at trial. So the reason this didn't come up and wasn't litigated ad nauseum wasn't because, it was because UPS never raised the affirmative defense, not because we waived anything.
Is it your view then that the 180-day statute is applicable in this instance?
Not in this instance, Your Honor, because Mr. Meyer, again, has two sources of rights under Chapter 4112.
And why is relation back important?
Well, it's important to the extent that UPS raised two issues on appeal and raised two issues before this court. One, that 180-day statute of limitations applies, and two, that the arbitration exclusion applies. But Your Honor made...
I'm having difficulty following what you're presenting to us. I appreciate that UPS suggests that the 180-day statute is applicable here. What's confusing to me is the position you have as to whether or not relation back is an essential part of your position because you agree that the 180 days applies, or whether your position is you have a 6-year period for the statute.
The position is, Your Honor, that there's that it doesn't matter because under either interpretation, Mr. Meyer's complaint
is
timely.
Which do you think is applicable?
6 years in this case, because the source of rights isn't just under O2A, like in Bellion, but O2A and .14A. And it's that .14A that triggers the 6-year statute of limitations. If all Mr. Meyer had was a .02A right, then by all means 180 days would apply. But that's not the factual scenario here. With regard to Your Honor's question about the arbitration exclusion, .14C expressly lays out the remedies that are not applicable where arbitration exists. And here's what it says. .02N, .05, so going to the OCRC, and .14B. It does not say anything about 411299, which was the remedy under which Mr. Meyer brought his claim. And I want to be clear, because this case is distinguishable from Bellion and from Leninger in this important regard. Mr. Meyer didn't have a remedy available to him under .02N, and he waited 180 days and now is coming to the court saying, well, let's let .99 kick in because I want 6 years instead of 180 days. By virtue of .14C, 411299 was the only remedy available to Mr. Meyer under Chapter 1412.
Ms. Henners, could I take you back? You're talking about remedy and sources of rights, and you have stated over and over again that the statute is clear on this. But you, the definitional section under 4112.01 never defines source of rights and remedies in two distinct ways. Where are you coming up with this distinction within the meaning or within the language of the statute?
Well, certainly I'm relying on this court's discussion in Leninger, but I think it goes all the way back to Ehlich. In Leninger, the court talked specifically, and in that context, they were looking at, is there any reason to have a public policy tort if we have a comprehensive remedial scheme under 1412? And in that context, what they said was, there's two sources of rights, 02A and 0.14A, and four independent remedies under 4112. Three of them permit a civil action.
So you're using the Leninger case to separate out the two. Is that what you're saying?
Certainly that's part of it, but then part of it's the plain construction of the statute as it's written. 0.02A prohibits age discrimination, among other forms of discrimination. 0.14 prohibits the hiring and firing on the basis of age. None of the remedies provisions talk about what conduct's prohibited. They talk about how the prohibited conduct, and in most cases, they refer right back to the rights section, but how in instances of prohibited conduct, a plaintiff goes about redressing that conduct, either through a civil action or through an administrative remedy.
But I guess my point is that those words are not really within the language of the statute itself in any specific area.
The words rights and remedies?
Source of rights, and then the remedies in specific sections.
Well, it's not entirely true because, for example, in 0.02N, the statute says an aggrieved individual can bring a claim based on the rights set forth in 02A relative to age discrimination within 180 days. So it is making a distinction between that's the remedy and it's referring to the right in that section. What's interesting about 0.14 is there's no similar language in that. When the exclusions that UPS talks about apply only to the remedies, they talk about being able to bring a civil action, not based on the rights conferred in one section or the other, but it excludes certain remedies without reference to any source of rights.
What is the legal significance of the determination by the arbitrator that Mr. Meyer was found to have been discharged for just cause?
Under 411299, none, because under 14C, which UPS is saying is the basis for that exclusion, 411299 isn't included among those remedies that are excluded
Why don't general principles of law apply? You have both parties represented. You have an issue determined. Why isn't that at least res judicata or issue preclusion in any subsequent legal action? It's a legal action.
Well, and this court addressed that a little bit in warning. But one, Mr. Meyer didn't have an independent right to arbitrate. That right belonged to his union. So he's at the mercy of the union. Number two.
Nothing that the union decided binds him? Is that what you're saying? That any decision that the union renders on his behalf or gets from a panel of arbitrators on his behalf doesn't bind him because the union doesn't really represent him?
Well, it contractually binds him, Your Honor. But the second part of that is.
But the determinations don't bind him? The legal findings don't bind him? Is that the basis of your argument?
The base of my argument, Your Honor, is that those legal determinations have nothing to do with motivation or why the employer does what it does. It looks at was there just cause for termination, not the question that's asked in a discrimination matter, which is what was the motivation? Was there an unlawful motivation for what the employer
did? Isn't that subsumed into just cause? If there's other motivation rather than he did something that deserved termination, that's subsumed in just cause.
Not according to the contract as the union asked it to be interpreted. It didn't. There is a separate discrimination provision that wasn't raised during this arbitration. The union didn't raise. So in that case, no, the arbitration panel never looked at that issue. It certainly, in the testimony at trial, was the arbitration hearing took about an hour. No attorneys involved, no discovery. It took about an hour, which was very different from a 2.5-year lawsuit that culminated in a week-long trial, which is what the courts envisioned. But I'll say this, the arbitration exclusion that exists because the General Assembly put it there. And what they said was that it doesn't apply to 411299. And the only shred of authority UPS offers to the contrary is the case in Hopkins versus UPS, which was a first district case that it expressly overruled, saying that was the old version of the statute that implied to the, where the arbitration exclusion expressly applied to the entire chapter. That doesn't exist anymore. Now it only exists to remedies that are under 0.01 through 0.14 and not 0.99.
You've used your time, Ms. Henners.
Thank you, Your Honor. I conclude in saying only this, and that is that there's no question that a one-size-fits-all statutory scheme would simplify a lot of issues. But we're stuck with the version
you've used your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. Bond, you saved 7 minutes of your time.
Ms. Bond, does Leininger cause you a problem in your position?
No, Your Honor. I believe Leininger is, in fact, consistent with our position. In Leininger, the court in a footnote indicated that the only statutory remedy available to Ms. Leininger was 0.14 because she had missed the 180-day statute of limitation. That implicates that the 180-day statute of limitations applies to both 0.02N and also to her claim under 0.99. There was some language in Leininger regarding the election of remedies requirement, but the Meyer court below took that language out of context. The context of Leininger was whether or not a public policy wrongful discharge tort claim is available to an individual, and specifically whether Chapter 4112 provides adequate remedies to protect society's interest regarding age discrimination. The court was not analyzing the overall context of 4112 and how 0.99 interacts with 0.02N and 0.14 with regard to what claims are available. It was focusing on the moment a claim accrues, in other words, the instant discrimination occurs, what remedies are available to an individual. So I believe that Leininger is perfectly consistent with UPS's position.
What is the relief that UPS is seeking from this court?
UPS would ask this court to overturn the decision below to the extent that it applied Chapter 4112 in a manner that is inconsistent with prior precedent from this court and with the legislative intent. The court below held that Mr. Meyer's claim was not barred by 0.14C because a age claim under 0.99 does not fall within that provision. We believe this court needs to reverse that determination. We also believe it makes sense for this court to go further in terms of the overall statutory framework and explain to all of the courts below who seem to have a lot of confusion as to how an age discrimination claim under 0.99 is to be analyzed in light of 0.02N and 0.14's requirements. And all of those claims are appropriately before this court as a result of the posture of this case. I'd like to come back to your question and add an additional point. In Leininger, importantly, the court noted that, or implied, that the remedy provisions, the specific remedy provisions regarding age discrimination, are an essential part of Chapter 4112. The court stated early in its decision that no public policy tort claim is necessary when remedy provisions are an essential part of the statute that creates the public policy, provided there's an adequate remedy. The court then held, as you know, that there is no public policy claim for age discrimination based on Chapter 4112. The court thereby implied that the remedy provisions applicable to age discrimination in Chapter 4112 are an essential part of that statute. It would be improper for this court to interpret the statute in the manner proposed by Mr. Meyer and thereby write out those essential remedy provisions.
Counsel, you indicated that we should instruct all the courts who are confused as to the operation of 99. What is that instruction? That you don't get a 6-year statute of limitations period?
The rule is that an age discrimination filed pursuant to 0.99 is subject to the substantive requirements found in 0.02N and 0.14C, all of 0.14. What that means is that you must elect either a judicial or an administrative remedy. As this court in Smith found, the legislature indicated it with clear language its intent that individuals elect between either a judicial or an administrative remedy with regard to age discrimination. So the rule that you would apply is that for all judicial remedies for age discrimination, including .99, the election of remedies doctrine applies. With regard to the arbitration bar, all claims for wrongful discharge, age discrimination, if the individual has an arbitration remedy available to them and either fails to use it or actually arbitrates the discharge and the discharge is found to be for just cause, then their claims under all of Chapter 4112 for wrongful discharge age discrimination are barred. With regard to the statute of limitations, which goes hand in hand to the available remedies, there are two positions. The Aramicus promoted the position that all claims, including .99 claims, are subject to a 180-day statute of limitation, which I think is an appropriate interpretation of the statute. UPS's alternative position is that to obtain full remedies for age discrimination, even if you're filing under .99, you must file within 180 days. If you file beyond the 180-day mark, then you are limited to the more limited remedies that are specifically articulated in .14. Interpreting the statute in that manner gives effect to all provisions regarding age discrimination. I'd like to point out, I believe that the legislature has given us at least some clear intention, indication of its intention. Ms. Hinners pointed you to section 0.08 in Chapter 4112 to indicate that there should be a liberal interpretation. But there is another very important provision in 0.08. 0.08 states that nothing contained in this chapter shall be considered to repeal any of the provisions of any law of this state relating to discrimination because of various categories, including age. Now, a prior version of this section specifically referenced 0.99 before it was made broader to apply to the entire chapter. But it previously said nothing contained in sections 4112.01 to 4112.08 and 4112.99 of the revised code shall be deemed to repeal any of the provisions of the law of this state relating to discrimination. That language was in effect when 0.99 was converted from a criminal penalty to a civil remedy provision. That gives us an indication that the legislature did not intend for the conversion of that provision of 0.99 to repeal any of the law that was in effect at that time relating to age discrimination. The law that was in effect at the time of the conversion of 0.99 was the substantive framework that we've just discussed regarding election of remedies, statute of limitations, and the arbitration bar. Unless the court has other questions, I'll conclude. We ask the court to reverse the decision below for all of these reasons, consistent with this court's numerous prior cases, and to uphold the legislature's intent regarding the treatment of age discrimination claims under Chapter 4112.
Thank you, Ms. Bond.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.